Welcome to a new episode of the India Independent Films Podcast. We are back. This is Rahul Desai, film critic for Film Companion. I have with me a full house today. Ishita is back, finally. Film critic for OTT Play and Uday, of course, film critic for Mint. Three of us are here. We're going to be discussing last week's Hindi films. There were a lot of films. We are not going to be talking about the Bijoy Nambiar film or Dune 2, unfortunately, because not all of us have watched all these films. But all three of us did manage to watch two fairly independent small films, one of them bigger than the other, of course. We're talking about Kiran Rao's Lapata Ladies, which made a splash in a few festivals last year. Of course, her second film after Dhobi Ghat, which was like ages ago. And we're going to be talking about Karan Gaur's Fairy Folk. Again, Karan Gaur making a film after 12 years, independent filmmaker. He made Shay in 2011 or 12, and he's not made anything since. But this is his second film, Chamber Drama. So we are going to be talking about these two films. All three of us have thoughts about all three and both films, and we did end up liking quite a bit of them, especially Lapata Ladies, which has been in the news lately. Going to be starting with Lapata, Kiran Rao's second film, as I mentioned. Uday, you seem to have liked it far more than I expected you to.
How? No, why?
Yeah, because I was like, no, it's you sounded really exuberant on Twitter when you shared your review.
I did not like Dune 2, so that's been like, that's in character for me with my Villeneuve problems, but I did like Lapata quite a lot. First of all, like, it's strange to think that Kiran Rao has kind of done nothing since Dhobi Ghat, which was back in 2010. She's produced a bunch of films, actually, but we tend to disregard that when we're looking at a director who's also a producer. So this is her first directorial effort since then anyways. And man, does it work. Anyways, a little bit about the film. It's we have a bride swap very early in the film. It happens on a train because the brides are dressed identically and their faces are covered by these heavy ghungats. And so Deepak, who is our protagonist, played by Par Srivastav, his wife, played by Nitanshi Goyal, named Phool, they are traveling back. She gets exchanged on the way because of the ghungat she can't see, and there's some places get exchanged, and another new bride, Pushpa, played by Pratibha Ranta, she comes off the train with Deepak. So these are our three central characters out here. And only when Deepak reaches back to his village does he realize that the wrong woman has come off the train with him. And Phool ends up on a railway platform, and she's very nervous, she's very scared, and out there then she has to kind of figure out a way. She has no money and she has no way to get in touch with Deepak. The only thing that she can remember is that his village has the name of a flower. And that becomes like a running joke through the film. Very beautifully done, I thought. And it kind of goes from there. They all, multiple police missing reports are filed with the police by Deepak and by Pushpa's husband. And the slow finding of the brides in the correct place is how the film kind of progresses. So yeah, if you haven't figured it out, it's like this sort of sly comedy, and written by Sneha Desai from a story by Biplab Goswami. I don't know if we've seen anything by them before. I don't know. Did something come up?
I think Ishita noticed something about, she was mentioning something about the story, Ishita.
So basically the genesis of it is a little similar to, there is a novel by Rabindranath Tagore. It's called Noka Dubi. So it's basically similar, where there are two women and there's a blinding storm, and they get swapped because they have a veil covered. And I mean, that's like a starting point. It's also like the subplot of the advertisement becoming a big role in the discovery that also was there. But I'm just, this was just like a Bengali nitpicking. I think they did more than that.
Wasn't there a Rituparno film by that name?
Yeah, it was an adaptation of that novel. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Okay. Huh. Right.
Interesting. Ishita, would you like to talk about why the film works for you exactly?
I'm a little surprised, not to echo Rahul here, but that Uday really liked it, because I think for a bit, Laapata, I felt it was a little on the nose with its messaging, and you know, just that, like, I think it was a little blunt with what it was trying to say, which I enjoyed, but I thought that it just, you know, like, it was just standing out for me a little. But what I liked is also what Uday mentioned, is just, you know, the flower joke, for instance, you know, where a fool says that the name of her husband's village is after a flower, and everyone starts guessing, and at the end someone is like, you know, you've turned us into bees.
Yeah.
Or you know, like that scene where Ravi Kishan basically finds out that the other bride was basically lying about her identity, and he's like, ye fool ne ye kaata tha, and you know, I've taken it out of your life. So I feel like these Laapata has these lovely moments, and like the dialogues also, they're really crackling, like they really work on the very surface level. And what really I really liked was that it was like every scene I felt was staged with a lot of care. Like the fact, like, you know, there obviously there are two women who get lost, but just the fact that, you know, when fool gets lost, she hides behind like a use me dustbin. You know, that you get it, like what, you know, Kiran Rao was trying to say, or the names of the women and the men in the film. You know, the women are like flowers, are named after flowers, and men are basically like, you know, after like light. Or the fact that, you know, the two stations where these women, you know, get lost, one of them is called Murti and the other is called, I think, Patili, which is like basically like, you know, an idol and a vessel, which is basically the two different ways in which women are generally looked at. You know, like, is either in the kitchen or in the temple. So I feel like I liked the way Kiran Rao very thoughtfully was crafting the film. Like, you know, it was just a very nice exposition of the very gentle female gaze. So yeah, on the backpack, this.
Uday?
I was a little worried in the first 10 minutes. Because it did seem a little bit like the sort of exaggerated way in which Hindi cinema can sometimes play stories set in rural India. Everyone's kind of very pronounced in their sort of eccentricity, and it just seemed to be going in that, and I a little tough, you know, to kind of take in. And but it really, I thought it really settles down very quickly after the family finds out that, you know, that they have the wrong bride there. And then the way that they sort of calmly, not calmly because everyone's panicking, but they don't take it out on her, and she doesn't panic either. And instead they all, and there's a nice moment where Deepak kind of goes up to her and says that, you know, I realize that this is tough on you also, and I promise that I'll get you back to your house or to your husband's place. So that's very nice. And over the course of the film, we find out that Pushpa has her own reasons for not looking too distraught when she lands up with Deepak instead of her husband, who we also meet you know, very soon after in the film, and he turns out to be like a less than, you know, desirable person. And there are certain revelations about her. Let's just talk about the two women, because they've Kiran Rao and Sneha Desai, they make quite a sharp distinction between the two. And I found that maybe with Pushpa and with Pratibha Ranta's performance, I thought it was a little bit more like a character that we've grown quite used to, like that kind of unembarrassed, kind of very talkative, very not cowed down by anything, that kind of person. And I don't know if it worked in this setting as well. I thought the other performance was of Goyal's was a little more in keeping with the setting. I thought maybe this was a little bit visual. But still, it's a very interesting compromise. A contrast between the two.
I think it was a great Freudian slip.
Compromise.
Yes.
But that was also my issue. One of the issues niggling though is that I feel like if someone is born in that milieu, you know, I feel it's a little bit of wishful thinking, as you said, the fact that she's behaving different, like so different. Like I at least I thought there was a little bit of an urban gaze in the way she was looking at it. Rahul, did you feel that?
Yeah, there definitely was. That was actually what stood out to me at least in the first hour of the film. And that the on the nose parts that you were talking about earlier, also a lot of it is with her character and how she's improving the people in Deepak's house, right? Like his family, his mother, his sister-in-law, everyone. Like it's one by one they are learning lessons from a character who seems to have been written from an urban gaze. Like it's a protagonist syndrome, basically. She's already more evolved than the others because she has to make a difference in the household. It doesn't look like she's from the environment, as opposed to, very rightly, as Uday mentioned, the other girl who's... that's not to say she is really subtle or anything, but the slightly mousy sort of caricature that we get used to in most other films, I think the Nitanshi Goyal does a very good job of like slowly leaning into her transformation. Like, because she's staying at the station, finds a bunch of like golden-hearted, like strangers who take care of her. And, you know, we've seen this many times. None of this is original in any sense. But all those on-the-nose things that happen in Deepak's house, I feel like they get nicely offset eventually in the long run, because, you know, like, as you mentioned, as Ishita mentioned about the details, very nice design, very nice details, little, tidbits here and there. And also because a lot of the characters are not, they aren't entirely antagonized, even though Deepak's family is very patriarchal, we see that. But they aren't entirely antagonized just to show that they are going to transform because of Pushpa, who obviously is lying about her identity, and they, you know, they come around eventually. But that coming around is a process that as Indian audiences, we love to watch, right? Like we love transformations. We love watching people who agree to be transformed, because, you know, in real life, that doesn't happen a lot. So this is very, when these kind of films happen, they tend to maybe like appeal to us a little more, because it's almost wish fulfillment after a while. And I think Kiran Rao really she really designed it really well. And Nitanshi's also was the character seemed like it was very much part of the milieu as compared to, say, Pratibha Ranta's, Pushpa.
Yeah, the one caveat I would probably put is that she seems like someone who really wants to escape that world, and who's like, her whole aim in life seems to be taking her beyond that. Like, she absolutely seems like someone who'd end up in a big city and who would embrace that life. Like, so maybe she's just kind of it, because it seems to be her destiny. Maybe she's just kind of fashioned herself like that, because, you know, once you find out about, you know, what she's doing, where she wants to go, that seems to be, you know, where she's going to end up, probably because of her determination and, you know, she's like, you know, talent. It's just a small thing, which was the pool going about and changing everybody's life. sorry, Pushpa going about and changing all the women's life in that household reminded me of the Rocky or Rani subplot where Alia Bhatt's character goes around and does that. Except it's slightly better done out here, and out there it's unwatchable. It's a little better done, because how could you do it worse than the Rocky or Ani scenes, really? It's
unnecessary.
Yeah, I found myself thinking about Raj in DDLJ, but then again, sorry. Ishita, yeah, go on.
No, I agree with Uday till he said that that was unwatchable. It reminded me also. I mean, very much when she tells... that other woman in the family that, you know, why don't you draw? Everyone is not blessed. It was very similar to that Rocky Rani subplot, you know, the mother and coaxing her to sing and everything. But I thought, I mean, unpopular opinion, the Rocky Rani, that bit, I think it worked a little more because I felt that milieu, the way she was behaving seemed more plausible than in Lapata. But having said that, I did think about, you know, the fact that why the film worked despite being on the nose and everything. And I think what Uday says is also true, that because if we look at the way the character ends up at the end, then I think it makes sense that she did fashion herself deliberately to not be like the rest. And so I think in that, if we look at it like that, in the whole context, it does work. And I think that is also why the last half an hour of the film worked for me so much.
Yeah,
because everything came together.
Yeah, they don't go the whole hog in any of the, with any of the characters, right? Like, it's not black or white, because with Pushpa's character, whose name is revealed to be Jaya at some point, obviously, she, even in the end, it's not like she... is responsible solely for whatever happens, right? Like, in the end, she does need the help of the law, of a cop, or of whatever happens at the police station. The reason that scene works is because it's not going all out. It's not showing her as some Alankrita Srivastav character where she's just like, you know, fuck patriarchy or something like that. It's not like that. It's all of the transformations are only up to a degree, which I really liked in the whole film, like, because even when this Nitanshi Goel's character Fool, when she is also coming up under like this tea stall owner who's pretty much a rural version of a man-hating feminist that is stereotyped so in so many films written by men in general, the way they tend to design such characters, even she learns a little from like Fool, and how, and the message isn't that like marriage is a bad thing, it's that you can still have your own individualism within a marriage, and that's how Fool transforms also. It's the same with the women in the house also, you know, it's not like and with Fool herself, like when she's learning to be a little more independent by working at the station, it's not like she's becoming a businesswoman or something, she's just learning that she has her own personality, she has her own agency. And I think that's what Kiran Rao gets right, that balance in this film. And of course, it's very crowd-pleasing, the last 30 minutes. And that's what worked with, as you both mentioned, Pushpa's character. Because in the end, Ravi Kishan's character is part of the whole climax. He had to step in to diffuse the situation and to give us the sort of happily ever after that all the characters deserve. So,
Just a few, a little bit about the Ravi Kishan character. We didn't talk about him till now.
Yeah, Ravi Kishan is the policeman his name is Shyam Manohar, and he is the one who Deepak goes to in his village to seek help for his missing bride. And he is introduced as a fairly colorful, corrupt policeman, the mostly we see in small town comedies. Very caricaturish in many senses, and it works here for different reasons, not least because Ravi Kishan himself is really good at playing these performances. And of course, even towards the end, we see him also slightly, transform because of the situation. And I thought like it was a very well-staged last 20 minutes, last 15 or 20 minutes. And it also... that's when Pratibha Ranta's performance or Pushpa's character in general got justified because of what she goes through in the last 15 or 20 minutes, because her husband comes looking for her, and because, you know, like Ravi Kishan's character steps in. So So yeah, also the most like, I guess that is his performance in the last 15 or 20 minutes is what I think it's is what made the film for a lot of us, because it was, we knew the film was building towards like a sort of a coming of age for all three characters, but I think it was just staged very well.
I want to talk a little bit about the writing, and a particular thing about the writing which I was really, really impressed by, that it's not only funny, like, you know, from moment to moment, and some of the dialogue is really funny, and some of the situations are funny, but it's also surprisingly intricate, in the sense that, you know, you'll have like what looks like a non sequitur, and then like 15 minutes later, 20 minutes later, you can have like a punchline that actually connects to that joke, and then half an hour later you'll have another joke that sort of connects to it, with the, you know, initially when he comes home, his Deepak's dadaji, he says jaagte raho instead of jeete raho. You don't get the explanation then. You only hear that he's a watchman like much later in the film. And then he does a jaagte raho right at the end, where it's just like another callback. And so like it's these things are kind of studded through the film, when the deputy cop under the Ravi Kishan character, when she's introduced, he says sports quota. And then we have a little bit on the sports quota later on when she's missing, and they said like she's going to collect like a whatever eggs and bananas that are given to sports quota people. So it's quite a thoughtful script. It's not like it's just, you know, a joke and then that thing is done. It's a joke that leads to another, that leads to another. And it's all like, it's planned really well. There are all these running gags that work really well. We've spoken about the flower one. There are a couple of others also. There's just this guy who keeps turning up and asking for chutney from Manju, and it's really funny. It has nothing to do in terms of furthering the story, but it provides like this sort of continuity, and through it you can kind of map Manju's you know, the effect of pool on Manju a little bit, because, you know, she becomes a little nicer to that guy whom she's just sort of dismissing in the beginning also. So I thought it was a very well written film in that sense.
Rishita?
Yeah, I totally agree. I feel like the film took its time to lay out the jokes and the callbacks. They were very intricate. And I liked how each character, you know, like exactly the way Uday said about that the female constable, you don't expect that joke to come back again, you know. And even like this is not like a joke, but I really liked that scene. Like, it was hilarious, I thought, when we see Ravi Kishan listening to a woman singing, and then you realize that the woman is basically singing to persuade him so that he takes less bribe, you know, to let his son go. So I like these little moments, or just the I liked also, you know, the callbacks of time. Like, it's like you see a huge Kahona Pyar Hai poster, in like a hand-drawn poster in the background. You can hear Harbhajan bowling to Ricky Ponting in the radio. And these are not on your face. It's there if you want to see it. So I really liked it. Like, I liked the world building very much of Lapata.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. Like, I mean, also we tend to get like, there's been like sort of a fatigue of nostalgia in terms of the amount of films that are being set in the 90s, late 90s or early 2000s or whatever it is, that decade. And we spoke about All India Rank also last week. And some of the nostalgia didn't entirely work for me in that film. But here, obviously, that it's smarter to set it in 2001, because it gives the film that sense of pace, where you're wondering why the hell isn't this case getting solved sooner. And then you realize that it's 2001, and, you know, that just like, apart from miscommunication and bureaucracy between stations, police stations, and even technology isn't at the stage where, you know, these rural police stations can communicate, and there's no urgency to solve it, because you think that entire stretch of Pushpa sort of settling into Deepak's house almost taken for granted that, you know, she has to stay here for a while. While the police are doing their job, that has to feel plausible only because of the era it's set in, not because in 2023-24 it would have been really difficult to justify that, you know, that very lax attitude that we see. So I thought that was nice, and like and these small decisions to, and you both are completely right about the writing, of course, that these little things actually made the film in hindsight for a lot of us. It's not just the big sort of emotional moments. It reminded me very much of how 12th Fail was made in terms of like committing to a simplicity of the script, right? Like, it's not some fantastic path-breaking script. We've seen this journey many times before. We've seen coming-of-age journeys for rural women, rural men, rural characters. And, you know, it's a tricky thing to do, especially if we've, especially in 2024, where, you know, like, formula tends to be not looked on very kindly as earlier. So I think it was that commitment, the filmmaking, the storytelling, the way they committed, the acting also, even the that lovely thing with, you know, the little callbacks that happened with Manju Mai and a lot of these characters that are very familiar because we've seen them over the years. But I feel like they all fit into the story very well. And they it's just the payoff. You don't get good payoffs enough in mainstream films these days. That's why I guess it reminded me of 12th Fail, because we knew we were waiting for that payoff, that film. And same year, you were waiting for Pushpa Ujaya basically to sort of break out of her situation. You were waiting for the reuniting of Phool and Deepak, and they really milked it, and in a good way. Like, I like being manipulated in like in these ways, because they really built up to that, and that's why the Ravi Kishan character also really came into the fray. So yeah, so these simple little basic things, when I guess when a lot of Hindi films do right, it's unusually and unexpectedly rewarding.
I was reminded a bit of Louis, Captain Renault in Casablanca, with how Manohar turns out in the end, like a corrupt cop who's kind of, you know, finds his conscience at the moment, but doesn't do it out of character. Like, he's still like this kind of sly, kind of weird, horny, slightly comical kind of character. I mean, very well played by Ravi Kishan.
It's also very he sticks to that, his performative persona, right? In the end also, he waits for everything to happen. The slap happens, he doesn't stop anyone. Then he was like, okay, now let me show you. And then the best thing is he takes the bribe after that also. While he's threatening the husband, saying that I'll put you in. It's not like he's transformed entirely. He takes the bribe but does something good for a change.
Were you familiar with the work of the actors in this? I think most of them were new to me, except for Ravi Kishan and Chhaya Kadam. I think we've seen her in a bunch of Nagaraj Manjule films. I remembered her from there. But everyone else, I think, was probably new to me.
Ishita?
I was just because you spoke about that that Ravi Kishan thing, that he basically takes the bribe and he is not still, you know, like he doesn't become like a different person. I feel like that for me was was like the, you know, the biggest merit of the film in every term. Like no one drastically becomes a different person. Even the feminism here is not like a solution. Like, as you mentioned before, like, you know, mostly how Alankrita tends to deploy it, like it will like a one blanket solution for everyone. And here also, like, just how Ravi Kishan also doesn't become a different person. He obviously does what he does, but he does it fully aware of that this is within the purview of his power, and takes the bribe at the end. Even for the women, I really liked that that the only time Phool takes name husband's name after not taking it for the whole film is to call him. It's not a show off, you know. It's not an act of rebellion. It's basically like she really wanted his attention, and you don't know if she will keep doing it or not. And you know, even the fact that, you know, at the end you see that the veil is still on her head. It might not be covering her face anymore. So I liked the balance that Laputa also struck somewhere, you know, in terms of everything.
Yeah,
they're not like, it's not a unbelievable amount of change that happens. It is, it's within reason, but
you can
definitely see the difference. And just the fact that they're walking hand in hand.
Yeah, very sweet. Yeah.
I mean, it's all sort of within the parameters of where they are also, right? Like, it's not like they're going to suddenly... lot of other films would have been like, let Poole live at the station and become like this, become like the woman that she's working under, let her like live her own life, let her hate marriage after that and stuff like that. But I think that is one of the many things that really works for, and for me, it was one of the main things that worked for Laputa Lady, that balance. And as for the performances, I have to admit, I haven't... any of the three young protagonists, Nitanshi, Pratibha, Sparsh, I haven't seen before. I really liked Sparsh Srivastav as Deepak in his role, because there were just moments throughout the film, like even when he tries to impress her with English during that montage and says, I love you. There's just moments where you could really tell that he's there's something different about him, the way he acts, and it's slightly nervous, it's slightly performative. You can tell that he watches probably a lot of Bollywood films on the side. So it's a very nice performance. He doesn't like overdo it. And he's also in the background for a lot of the film, because technically it's about two different women in different situations, difficult situations. So I really liked Sparsh's performance compared to, of course, Ravi Kishan was the scene stealer, because his character also was written a certain way. But amongst the younger actors who I've never heard of before, and I understand that Nitanshi Goyal is a big sort of, I think she's huge on social media. She has millions of followers apparently on Instagram. I didn't know while I was only looking up the cast, I realized. And it's also furthers this trend of a lot of the social media, not just influencers, but a lot of people who have been the younger generation been really popular on social media. Their natural step up has been becoming an actor or an actress. And we've seen this in the last couple of years with a lot of OTT shows, a lot of films. Most of them haven't been bad at all. And I feel like Nitanshi also really, I think she got that sort of, you know, this fool character, which could have gone wrong also, because you know it's a fairly cliched arc to pull off, because you're basically with a bunch of strangers, there's a little bit of poverty porn here and there, and you know you can easily overdo it, especially because Poole has to say a lot of on the nose things where she's saying, why do we not be given opportunities, and you know she says these things aloud, and it could have gone wrong also. But I think the performance is really helped. It helped that they were new also.
Yeah. There's a lot of that in the second half, I have to admit.
Yeah.
So I just ignored all that. And there's also Geeta Agarwal.
I was just coming to that. Our favorite mother. My theory is she's still shooting in a village.
Ishita's theory is that she's been shooting in a village on the same set for the last three films.
And different films just come in as different characters. That's fantastic. I love that theory.
Yeah. Fairly very enjoyable film, good payoff, good conflict, very simply done and nicely done, very effective. A lot of good performances in this film. I don't know if it'll release on streaming anytime soon, but I hope it does, because I'm not sure about how many people are going to watch it in theaters. It is playing in cinemas right now, but I'm guessing not for long because it's fairly small. The good thing is that everyone who seems to have watched it liked it. It did catch fire last year, I think, when it premiered at Toronto Film Festival, and I'm glad it's released now. Do you have anything to add about this film before we move on, both of you?
No, but I'm just curious. I wanted to know from both of you that, you know, did you all anticipate Kiran Rao to make a second film like this after making Dhobi Ghat? Because I hadn't. So I just wanted to know, like, you know, because she hasn't made a film for so long. Did you all think that she would make something like this?
I mean, I prefer this to Dhobi Ghat for sure. I think it's I think it has a lighter touch, even with all the, you know, slight sermonizing that we get later on. I think it's a more like fluent sort of filmmaking, like lighter on its feet. So in that sense, I don't know if I would have guessed that it was her if it was like a blind test after this and Dhobi Ghat. But I'm quite happy that she's back, because it's not like I disliked Dhobi Ghat either. There are interesting things, and I think she has like a, she has certain things which she does which is different from other people. I think she really has a way with the film scores for one. Like the Dhobi Ghat score, of course, done with very, very big names, Gustavo Santaolalla for one. And this one, I think is Ram Sampath has done the music and the score, if I'm not mistaken.
I think Ram Sampath has done both.
And very nice and very different. But even then, you can kind of, you get that sort of, like, at some points, there is just this sort of guitar playing sadly, like a lone guitar. And that's very much like the Dhobi Ghat score, and reminded me of that. So yeah, I don't know if I would have guessed that this was another Kiran Rao after all these years, after Dhobi Ghat, but I'm glad that she's kind of back to directing.
I mean, for me, it was hard to tell, like, with one film what her signature is really, because I don't remember much of Dhobi Ghat. I remember having watched it and thinking it's a fairly, like, you know, film school-y, experimental, nice to watch sort of that kind of film, which wouldn't have released in any other, there was no streaming then either, so it was a miracle that it released also. But I didn't even know what kind of filmmaker she really was, so I don't know if I expected anything at all in terms of where she'd go in which direction. And if this is I'm very happy to sort of see that this is her, it, you know, to be honest, it very much felt like an Aamir Khan Productions film, this one. Like, very much Secret Superstar-ish or Lal Singh Chaddha-ish in terms of how it hits those emotional highs, those notes, those slight, where, you know, that very thin line between manipulation and convincing.
Or, you know, or Peepli Life. Which...
Or Peepli Life, for that matter. Yes, of course, satire. And so doing the simple things right in terms of that, and I still maintain I really like Lal Singh. And a lot of these productions over the years have got certain things right which are undeniable. And I felt like Lapata was very much in that genre of sort of productions that we've seen coming from that production. So, but that's also to say that Kiran Rao's got her gaze here and really elevated a film that could have been very ordinary otherwise. And I think that's the mark of a good, not just a good filmmaker, but like a pretty good storyteller as well, where she's, you know, she makes sure that we notice the little things, but they don't hijack our experience of the film also. So yeah, I'm glad to see that if this is the kind of, because you'd want to call it like a mainstream film almost in terms of tone, but at the same time, you know, like, you know that it's very much you know, within what Kiran Rao wanted to sort of portray or what she wanted to make. So and she didn't write the film either, so that's another plus, where director sort of translate a writer's vision onto the screen, even though she may be, have been involved in the development. So it's always nice to see.
Yeah. Speaking of little things, let us segue very smoothly to Fairy Folk out here.
Not a bad segue.
Very smooth.
Not bad, right? Like, you know, I was looking for stuff, but, you know, this was the closest I could get. Ishita, why don't you tell us a bit about the film?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Putting you on the spot straight.
Yeah. So Fairy Folk, for those who haven't watched, it's by Karan Gaur. It's an indie film. It has almost like it's an independent film. almost like improvised. It unfolds like it's improvised, and I think it is. It has Mukul Chadda and Rasika Duggal in the main lead. So it is about a married couple, and their car break down in the middle of a forest, and they encounter a fairy folk, which is like a mythical being, and they get scared. They come home. The fairy folk also comes, follows them back. And it just, that arrangement over the course of the film becomes like a very strange threesome, because you know, he, the fairy folk, almost becomes like a manifestation of you know, like their marriage burnout, you know. So I don't know how much to say and how much not to say, because it's just
You can speak about it, because I'm assuming, like, first of all, not a lot of people have watched it. I don't know if it's come on streaming, but it'll be interesting to discuss, because it's a very, like, detailed film in that sense.
It's barely in theaters, by the way.
Yeah,
so,
yeah,
that's true.
It's not playing in Delhi, for example. So, yeah.
Okay, so after the fairy folk comes, so we see that, you know, Mukul Chadda, the the character that he is playing, he's, I'm assuming, a house husband, and Rasika Dugal's character, she's an actress, so she works. So he obviously gets more invested in this fairy folk, and he trains them in a way, gives them instructions, draws eyebrows, and they or kind of develop, which I feel like a very Victor Frankenstein and his monster relationship, where he's like, you know, he takes pride in his creation almost, and then one night, they have a party and they are drunk, and Mukul Chadda's character kisses the fairy folk, and it basically results in that person turning into a man who imbibes attributes of who Mukul Chadda's character used to be at some point. So he's a little bit of the past, and a little bit of, like, there's a newness to him, because the fairy folk is at once who he was and who he isn't. So then it's just so bizarre. Anyway, so
I'm really impressed by this.
I love that.
Sabri, there's no way I could have done this.
It is so bizarre. And then, like, I hate doing this, and Uday gave me this film. Okay, so then I'm coming to this. So then what happens is that Rasika's character, which is called Ritika, so she starts, she develops a relationship, which is physical relationship, and I think Mukul Chadda's character, which is Mohit, he kind of makes peace with it, because he feels this will probably save his marriage. And then he starts feeling lonely. So then they go back and repeat the process. They get a fairy folk, and he feels he will also get a younger Ritika. But that experiment doesn't work quite much, because what eventually leads out of it is that there is another man, a woman trapped in a man's body. And this kind of spirals into further conflicts. This is where I draw the line. Yeah. Now, friends, tell.
I mean, fairly good, not bad. Very sly of Uday to give you this film out of all, I must say.
Let's do this more systematically, so that if anyone's lost, maybe they can follow along. The first iteration, basically, that they run into the fairy folk of the first fairy folk, who doesn't have a name, and who is kind of a blank slate, as Ishita mentioned. It becomes a bit of the Dr. Frankenstein and monster relationship out here. The amazing thing is that this film is so, it's so relentlessly inventive that you could have done a whole film just with that premise, like the Ritika and Mohit encountering this sort of kind of blank slate creature whom they sort of bring into their lives, and then this, they start treating it like a domestic worker, and their friends are freaked out, and that in itself could have been the whole film. But that's just like the first, 20 minutes or half an hour or something like that. And then it turns, and then it turns again. It's just quite amazing how the film keeps on and on changing. Like every 15 minutes, it's like a completely, something's come that has completely changed the relationships between the characters.
That's a good point, because, you know, even when I was watching the film, and like when you, they encounter this, you know, genderless sort of creature, and they take it home. There's already, like, you know, sort of world building has happened. Suspension of disbelief has happened. It's absurd enough that they take that the creature follows them home and becomes very much a part of this very odd you know, marital arrangement. And
very funny performance by Nikhil Desai, by the way.
Yeah, like fairly good performance. Like it reminded me of Edward Scissorhands in some sense. It reminded me of so many. It's very physical performance without really seeing it. And
one of those Brendan Fraser performances in those early comedies that he did, where like completely deadpan but hilarious somehow.
So that setup itself was, they could have gone on with that, because when their friends come over, it's obvious that, you know, they have a friends group, they have these drinking sessions and their dinner together, and it's all improvised. So, you know, it's really like fluid, it's really funny in parts, the reactions are really natural. So you could have made a film on that alone, where just a creature staying in your house and becomes, and that itself could have been commentary on the marriage, right? Because there is tension in the marriage. And but they went, you know, like as you said, every 15 minutes after that, there's not just a new addition in terms of where the film is heading, there's a new character every 15 minutes. So the fact that, you know, they even went so far as to make this creature become manifestation of each other's desires, and then, you know, become this sort of metaphors for both of what both of them need in their marriage but can't get, and stuff like that. I think they went in very unexpected directions, and that itself is really fun to watch, because it always feels like the film is jumping out of its own comfort zone and confronting a new kind of truth, and they don't need to do it really, because it's a chamber drama. Most of it is set in an apartment. It's used very well, the lack of budget. All the actors are, you know, very competent. They are, of course, a real-life couple also, so that helps a lot in terms of, you know, its meta-messaging and the chemistry between all of them. The gang is all, like, all of them know each other, you can tell. So, I mean, you don't know, it's magic realism, it's sci-fi, it's a bunch of things, but I really like that, you know, all the commentary that they make on their marriage and this husband and this wife going through a difficult phase, and basically the film is centered on the husband and his expectations from, you know, from the marriage, what he wants, who he is, a failure of him as a person. But I like that never really hijacks the fun that they have with the form of the film. It goes in these directions, and a lot of the new actors who are introduced are consistently engaging. The woman in the man's body who's engaged, Hansa, I thought, you know, he was played wonderfully well by Asmit Patare, who I understand is also an independent filmmaker. I thought it reminded me very much of Joyland for some reason. A lot of that, the threesome that happens there in terms of that triangle, a lot of the tragedy, the unsaid sadness that happens between from Hansa's, at least from Hansa's end with Mohit, I think a lot of that reminded me of. So it just, you know, direct and control of his craft and letting us sort of go with the flow of where the film would like to sort of just take us.
Did you catch who'd written the film? Because I couldn't find a writer's credit, or either I missed it or something. It just says a film by Karan Gaur at the end. I couldn't find a writer credit.
No, I think it's written and directed by him, by Karan Gaur himself, I think.
Has he done something that we've seen? Or
made this independent film called Shay like 10 or 11 years ago.
Oh, right, yeah.
The black and white film. And it's shocking that you don't remember the black and white film. It had, of course, Rasika Dugal. A lot of us were introduced to her as a very competent actress in that film. It also, you know, and that was also a psychological drama of sorts. It was again based in a mythical-ish space also. Like, it was about an idol and a wife gets obsessed with it and she goes a little crazy. I thought that was a very well-acted film. I don't remember much of it now, but I remember it being like a big deal in the Warsaw independent sort of, you know, how it is, that community back in 2011 when it got a limited release. So, that this is very much on the lines of that, but it's also a little more evolved in that sense, very contemporary. I really like that they used a real-life married couple. Ishita?
Yeah, I don't know how anyone's marriage can survive after acting this in this film. Like, I have so much respect. Like, it's such a weird film. And as Uday said, that like when the first experiment happens, in my head I thought this is where the film will probably, you know, this is where it will go, and then it completely changes again, and I'm like, I don't even know where it's going at. So yeah, it's a very strange, very weird film, but it's also like, I like that the weirdness is you know, it's not the only thing about the film. Yeah. Like it's just like it's also talking about things which are commonplace, in the sense, you know, like what do you want from a relationship, you know, what, you know, how do we want to be in a relationship? So these are very fundamental questions which are presented and packaged in a very inventive way. Like I really like you know, that the film does not settle for easy solutions. Like it's looking for answers even till the last frame. Like you know, like what do we really want? And the fact that you know, Mukulchida's character just gets down and walks off. Like these things really worked because, you know, they are like, there is no answer to it, and the fact that the film reckons with it. So I think that really worked, and also like the just everything felt very improvised, which was not too much. I feel like it was also very, like both Rasika and Mukul, their interactions, like you can understand that these are not scripted, but they were also like fitting so well, like when they were talking.
It did have a bit of that theater feel to it. Like this could very easily be a play. It's just like basically a series of conversations in rooms for the most part. And I was actually wondering whether it had some basis in a play, but it doesn't seem to have. Unfortunately, also looks like it's shot on a potato, so not my favorite thing about the film. And some of the scenes are just like so weirdly underlit that you feel that it's deliberate. Like no one would actually shoot it like that. Like it must be deliberate. Maybe it's like to get some kind of home video feel or something on it. I don't know. So smart, and as you'd mentioned, Rahul, you'd said that, you know, the second and third fairy folk that turn up, who are, they're kind of like a manifestation of the desires of the couple, but also their insecurities and their hopes for what they want in a partner, which they have now had to adjust as everyone does in a relationship. But it's really funny that when the second Mohit turns up, who's played by Chandrachur Rai, and who eventually gets the name Kabir, it's funny because he's a better Mohit, at least in terms of what Ritika wants. And that's why, you know, he kind of... Mohit is like, why can't I have like a better Ritika? And when he gets his Ritika, it turns out to be a guy, and the look on his face is so funny there, and it's so beautifully played by Asmit Patare, Hansa's character, because the new Ritika / Hansa is. Has the feelings that Ritika has for Mohit, but Mohit just can't get beyond the idea that this, it's a man. He wants to feel attraction, and he cannot, even though in terms of personality it is a match for Mohit, but it's just the attraction isn't there, and it's saying so many. It's like there are all these like little things that the film is saying, but it's not really stressing anything out there. There's a very sweet little part where Mohit is telling Hansa that, you know, I'll help you become independent, and Hansa corrects him, saying, you know, that's still dependency. And it's just like little moments like that I thought are so clever and so well written. So it's basic.
Shishita?
Yeah, same. I really liked also like Mukul Chadha's performance a lot. I thought he was so good. Yeah. And also Ashmit Bhattare, but oh, there's very, like, very right. I feel like they don't stress and these moments just come out of nowhere and they are almost sometimes uncomfortable to watch because the joke is kind of like on Mukul Chadha. Like in the morning when, you know, he feels that the new Ritika has come, he goes to the washroom and basically like quickly cleans himself.
That's brilliant.
And then his face falls because yeah. He's like, what happened? And none of these are like, no one is laughing. Like, it's a real tragedy for him, you know? So yeah, the fact that these little moments are all scattered in the film and it's like, you make what you want to make out of it.
Hmm.
So yeah.
Very calibrated, sort of nice. I mean, as we know, you know, these situations were technically funny on paper, like, you know, with Mohit seeing like who has come instead of the Ritika he expected, then being stuck in a certain situation. I mean, you'd imagine a sort of like a very tragic Michael Scottish character, you know, all the time, like always like never really getting. And any other film might have played him for a certain kind of comedy. So Mukul Chadha did a fantastic sort of, got a fantastic balance of, I mean, it was very poignant also to watch him in the last 15 or 20 minutes, especially that part yeah. with Uday you mentioned, which with Hansa, where there's this tragic sort of undercurrent between them because of, you know, her gender and, you know, despite that they're very compatible and at the same time you have to keep remembering that she is also Ritika. She has her experiences, she has her memories, so she keeps referring to things that he did in the past and laughs at it now, even though it feels like a fresh marriage but also feels like a lived-in marriage. So there are a lot of little layers happening and you can tell that Mohit is really enjoys the Hansa's company, because that there's this lovely scene which is probably my favorite of the film, where Hansa accompanies him to poker night with the guys and you know, totally becomes one of the guys there, because you could see in how Ashmit also plays that scene that Hansa is sort of almost realizing the sort of the endlessness of who she is because of her gender, because of how she looks. And realizing that, you know, this is maybe where Ritika had her limitations with Mohit, or Mohit had it in his head. So the fact that she becomes one of the guys and Mohit can look at her like that, it makes him very relaxed. And very nice little riff on like marital dynamics there, on like how a guy tends to perceive himself when his partner is around compared to when his friends are around. So these little things really added up. And that's why I found like the last few scenes of the film were for me very poignant. Like I was pretty moved by the end, especially with the way Mohit's sort of character unfolded and the way Mukul Chadha played him in the end. And not a lot of dialogue in the end, you just see a montage of sorts, and Mohit wanted a certain Ritika, got that, and then, you know, there's this lovely last shot of the film. So yeah, it really adds up, even though it's a very, very weird film.
Yeah, it's, I don't know, did any of you think of RK with this, the Rajat Kapoor film that got a rave on this podcast and absolutely nobody has seen?
Yeah, that's a good actually reference. It didn't remind me of that, but now that I think of it, yeah, not just in terms of how indie it is and all, but even in terms of all the motifs there in the film and all. Yeah. Also yeah, very effective.
And also it shares an actor in Chandrachur Rai. So I think that may have been what jogged my memory of that. But once you think of it, they are actually like, they're quite a pair, the two of them, in terms of like someone who's kind of not very happy with how their life has turned out. And then a version of them comes along, and a better version, and then how that affects everything. Though RK is very playful and it's not exactly a relationship film. This is very much a relationship film. It's strange actually with Kshay and this. It's almost like he made his first film second and his second film first.
Mm.
There is, you know, this seems very much like the, you know, Suleimani Kida kind of very low budget indie just getting friends together in rooms and you know, having them sort of interact and shooting it all and sort of coming out with something 6 weeks later. This has that very first film feel, whereas Cher is a lot more more stylized and it seems like something that you'd make like after your debut's out of the way.
Yeah, I mean, Cher was I think it like took some 4 years to make or something. So, and yeah, you're right, that felt more cinematic, not just because, you know, of the palette and whatnot. It was a very intense film. This is a little more meta. This is, as you said, Soleimani Kida mold. So, but yeah, that, I mean, it's just I really like the, like, I mean, Mukul Chadha and Rasika have, obviously it goes without saying that their chemistry is great, but it, as Ishita mentioned early on, it's really brave, sort of. You realize how much actors have to put themselves out when they do films like this. And, you know, like really acting like versions of themselves in a marriage that is probably a reflection of, you know, the relationship they share and how much to be, how much to put yourself, since it's entirely improvised, how much to say, how much not to say, so much subtext, will someone feel bad, will someone not feel bad. It's crazy how much actors have to like really wound themselves in order to put their art on screen. And you see it in like performances like this or in films like this, because it's made by Karan Gaur, because all of them have been probably known each other for so long, they probably didn't have to script it too much, and you're guessing that, you know, they put a lot of themselves into this film, both Rasika and Mukul. So it's a brave performance, both of them. Like, really, Rasika has obviously become very popular in the OTT space in the last 6 or 7 years, and when Cher released, nobody really knew her. So I also like that, you know, she didn't become the centerpiece of this film despite that.
Yeah, I did this film have a festival rep? Did it do that thing at all?
So the first time I watched it was, I think, when it was one of the submissions to MAMI during the pandemic. And that's when I think we had selected it for the online whatever version. I think it played last year in MAMI as one of the films that were selected in the previous years. So, but I don't think it played many places. Maybe like a couple of Indian film festivals abroad. In Australia, if I'm not mistaken, a couple of others, but not a big festival run or anything. And I don't think Karan Gaur is also based in Bombay or anything. So it's one of those films that was made during the pandemic also. So so yeah, I don't know of much else. Ishita, would you like to add anything more?
No, like whatever you said, like just, you know, when you were talking about the couples putting themselves out there, like I remember this scene where Rasika with she's sitting, Rasika's character, you know, she's sitting with her friends and she looks at Kabir and says, you know, he's very adventurous, more than Mohit. And I was thinking, you know, how does it feel like, you know, because for all, it might just be true, and it's just so strange for a real life couple, you know, to, and that too with their friends. So yeah, it's very, that is why I feel it also contributed to the disorientingness of the film, the fact that it's so weird, you know, it's very much like embedded in the DNA, starting with the casting. Also, I feel like I just want to give a shout out to that scene where Chandrachur Rai is buying things from society, and he's buying, and Mukul Chadha just leaves without paying for it. I thought it was a great scene. It was so cringy because he was like, now what should I do? And it was just like, it's a very silent, like no one talks, but then Mukul Chadha is just being unkind for once, because he feels like, you know, he wants to give it back to this guy. I thought that was great.
And that disorientation of Mukul Chadha looking like a really nice guy in general, right? Like in the lot of the times we've seen him over the years, whether it's in shows or small bit roles in films or in ads or whatever it is, short films also, I've seen him. He just looks like that very sort of very affable guy.
Yeah.
And like, it's really hard to hate. You not imagine him playing any kind of negative character per se. And that's why, you know, casting against type is such a big deal. And here, the few scenes that he does lose his temper in later on in the dining table also, when everyone's a little tipsy and he gets jealous when he raises his voice. These are very like alarming, disorienting, jarring scenes to watch, and in a good way. Like Mukul Chadha can really bring it, like if given the... Because, you know, like we thought when he came in Sherni, I think as Vidya Balan's husband, I thought that would be the time he gets more roles in mainstream cinema, he breaks out in a way. but he's still been mostly constrained to like OTT shows. He did the Hindi version of The Office and a bunch of other things. So, but yeah, it's nice to see him in a full-fledged sort of protagonist role.
Yeah, I love when she says early on, Ritika says that, you know, you think things through and, you know, you take all the joy out of it.
Mm.
And I think perhaps that's why his Ritika, his new fairy folk Ritika, who's comes to be Hansa, turns out not exactly like he was, because sometimes, you know, it just happens with people who are just trying
overthink.
To like, you know, overthink things and like putting too much logic into it. And it things just don't work out for them because they've put too much thought into it. And Ritika is very much a go with the flow kind of person in the film. And so you can see things sort of landing for her. Like, she's not the one pushing the change, but she sort of just rolls with it and it keeps working out for her. And that makes sense with that complaint that she has. And if we assume that we are watching like their fears and their hopes kind of play out through all these fairy folk that are entering their lives, then that makes perfect sense, I thought. So the film does have like a great emotional logic running through it, even though it is very weird and kind of wacky.
Yeah, that's a great point, actually.
Mm. Yeah. I think that's a very good point. Like, it just reminds me of when they try it for the second time and Mukul Chadha is insistent of Rasika to just give him, the kiss the fairy folk, and she is dozing off. And he's so good. You know, he's like, yeah, now I'm turning back, now do it. Like, he's just, like, there's so much nervous energy. Yeah. In this, just a physical performance otherwise. Yeah, but I totally agree. I think what Uday said makes very, very good sense. Yeah.
I guess that's about it with Fairy Folk, delightful little independent film. I don't think it's playing anywhere in any of your cities, if any of the listeners are wondering, unless like there's one theater in Bombay or something, but hopefully it'll come on streaming at some point. A lot of us watched it on screeners as well. There was a screening in Bombay, but that's about it. And we, of course, discussed Laapatta, which is, I think, still going on in theaters. Do watch. Get back to us if what your feelings are about the film. Getting a lot of rave reviews also. Nothing else you'd like to add about any of the films, right?
No. I'm just look out for it later, I guess, when it's on streaming. And go watch Laapatta while it's still on. And of course, a whole bunch of other films right now in theaters, bunch of good ones. So it's a good time to be. Actually, there's too much stuff. There's like even we are finding it difficult to watch everything. Even Rahul is finding it difficult to watch everything. It's nice to have these problems. And it's nice that things like Laapatta Ladies and Fairy Folk are landing in theaters at all.
Yeah. That's true. I am struggling to watch everything. Cannot deny. So that was our double bill for this week. Do write into us if you have any suggestions, and we'll be back soon. March is a packed month as well, and we'll be hopefully discussing more films or shows over the next couple of weeks. Thank you for listening, and see you soon.